Welcome to the Terrible Podcast with your hosts from thehammerspeaks.com, David Todd, and from SteelersDepot.com, Dave Bryan. Just two Daves talking all the Steelers football you could ever want. And now, here's Dave and Dave.
Welcome to the Terrible Podcast with Dave and Dave. He's Dave Bryan of SteelersDepot.com, the most comprehensive Steelers site on the internet. I'm David Todd of ESPN. Dave, a lot going on in the NFL. It's interesting times. We had a game last night. The Giants looked like they come in banged up, and everybody's looking for Carolina as the home team to pull this one out, and they just get stomped. When you stop, as soon as you think the Giants are in a tight spot, they seem to play some of their best football. I wonder, and it worries me a little bit as the Steelers go to Oakland, if we got a banged-up team in Oakland. Of course, the Steelers are a little banged up, but you got an even more banged-up team in Oakland that's 0-2. I don't want to say fully their season's on the line, but their season's on the line. This is a bit of a scary week. I'll just liken it back a little bit to the conversation with Pitt and Virginia Tech. When I hear people talk about the Steelers now laying 4, everybody and their mother's like, oh, my God, that's the lock of the year. It looked like Virginia Tech laying 10 was a lock of the year in college, and Pitt came and beat them. Are you worried at all about what we got going this weekend in Oakland?
You know, the word that I hate tossed around in the NFL.
Trap game.
Trap game. I hate that word.
Me too.
Because every game in the NFL is a trap game. You're dealing with professionals here. These guys are paid to play. The talent level is pretty balanced for the most part. That's why I hate everybody said, oh, this is a trap game. Every game is. Now, that being said, yes, they are flying out west. And when we get into some of this breakdown of this game, I'll tell you what kind of scares me a little bit more than most. It's more of not knowing what the Raiders are going to do because of all the injuries that they have in the secondary and at linebacker. So, yeah, I mean, anytime you have a team like the Steelers who haven't traveled out west lately very well over the years, there is a little bit of worry there, and I think the line is reflecting that in this game.
Yep, and it's moved down from 6, but we'll get to that in our picks and our breakdown. Let's start things out with the injury report. Man, I took the first glance at the Wednesday injury report, and we talked about it. We talked about it on my show. We had already done we did talk about it on the podcast. We did it late on Wednesday. But the injury report sends a little tingle through your spine, because there are a couple names on there, and you say that we hadn't heard about on Tuesday, and we knew Mike didn't exactly give us a great diagnosis on Troy when he gave the report last week. So it was great to see yesterday's injury report, seeing Dwyer, Mike Wallace and Manny Sanders not on it, and then we had a variety of other things as well. Obviously, the couple guys who look like they may not go, and then a couple questionables. Why don't you run through the list for us?
Yeah, James Harrison, Troy Polamalu did not go. Right now, there's no way they're going to go in Oakland this week. So go ahead and X those two guys off once again. Byron Leftwich was added to the injury report with an illness. He's going to probably go today there. No real worries there, in my opinion. Heath Miller did not go again for the second time, but, he's real sore from what I'm understanding and reading and hearing some of his comments. If he does not go today, at least limited, Houston, we have a problem. But I think he's going to go at least limited. I bet he goes full today. I like I said earlier in the week, I don't think he'll miss this game.
And let me just throw in that I cracked 4 ribs, and I'm not going to tell you how on this episode. Maybe if I have a couple cocktails sometime, I'll tell you how. But cracked 4 ribs in college, and I was playing soccer, and I couldn't play for a period of time. It is one uncomfortable thing. But after 3 weeks, I could run and do all those things. I played the whole season with a flak jacket on. He said he didn't want to wear something. I want to tell you something. A flak jacket's an amazing thing. It's incredibly light and incredibly protective. He didn't want to take another shot in those ribs. I hope Well, it's not for me to tell Heath what to do, but I hope somebody's at least showing it to him and saying, look at the protection you can have here. It may not make him feel better, but it certainly will lessen the likelihood that he gets another hard shot right into that area.
And his rib cartilage injury from what Tomlin said on Tuesday there. So, like I said, I think it's a lot of discomfort. We'll see if he looks a little bulkier on the field. But I expect him to suit up. Mike Adams, for a guy that played one snap, was limited, I believe, on Wednesday. Thursday did not practice. So, we have to watch. Mike Tomlin does not like to suit up rookies or younger kids on the roster that miss significant practice time during the week. The veterans can get away with it. If he does not go today, you have to figure he's down. And Kelvin Beachum, you would figure at that point would dress then for Sunday, but we'll have to wait till that injury report comes out about noon today. As you mentioned, Jonathan Dwyer, who's battling turf toe, Marcus Gilbert with the groin, Manny Sanders with the knee, Mike Wallace with the groin. They all practiced fully on Thursday after sitting out on Wednesday, so they should be good to go today and for the game on Sunday. Rashard Mendenhall, all the things are positive on him. Whether or not he suits up is a different story, though. I'm willing to bet right now, if I had to lay down two nickels your direction, I would say he doesn't go this week. They give him one more week in the bye week and then bring him back for the game against the Eagles. Stevenson Sylvester, it looks like this guy's close to being back. Is this going to be the week for him? I suppose, because they could just as easily, if he's ready to contribute on special teams, and that's where he would be needed the most right now, you could see an instance where Adrian Robinson is inactive instead of Sylvester for this game. So, watch his status today with Sylvester. He practiced fully after being limited on Wednesday. And, we'll see what Tomlin decides, what direction he decides to go with that, if he wants one more week down for him and, bring him back after the bye week instead of bringing him back for this game. But that's your injury report. When you look at the Raiders real quick and their injury report heading into today, they got Rolando McClain back on the field limited on Thursday. Now, he still has not been cleared for contact. Neither has Coy Francis, one of their backup corners, who's also a return specialist for them as well. Khalif Barnes, their right tackle, groin, and Shante Spencer, foot, did not go again. Neither one of those guys are expected to suit up on Sunday for the Raiders. Their limited guys are going to be fine. That's Sebastian Janikowski, Tywan Jones, a running back. Their backup, Alex Parsons, a guard. Richard Seymour with a knee. Tight end David Osberry with a shoulder. We're all limited. And Jerron Kreiner, one of their backup wide receivers, practice fully. So the only two guys that are going to be down, we know, I think, is Khalif Barnes, Shante Spencer, and watch the status of Rolando McClain to see if he can get cleared for contact today.
Yeah, that's. I think that's the interesting one in terms of unclear of his status. We saw what happened with Darrell Revis last week. Again, we'd just be guessing, but if he doesn't go today, I'd be really surprised. He won't have practiced all week, and then it's a question, are you just going to put him in the game? But I will say he's an important part of that defense. So this Raiders team is really banged up. And Dave, you ran through everything perfectly. So on Mendenhall, yeah, I would agree with you. I heard Jerry Dulac say yesterday that he made a cut in practice that was so good. It was a cut that he'd never seen Mendenhall do before. So it encouraged him in terms of where he stands with his knee. Again, Mike Tomlin said he's not. There's no point in saving guys, and you're not saving guys. And I think you're probably right on. Looks like I would say no chance Harrison goes at this point. I'd say unlikely Mendenhall. I'd say Troy's unlikely as well, and Stevenson Sylvester probably maybe the closest. I'd put him at questionable in my mind of how they do things. It's if you're going to exacerbate the injury, there's no point. There's absolutely no point in having anybody go if they are what they are and they're good to go. And I imagine Mendenhall's probably as close to 100% as any of those guys. But it may be just a question of how many hats do you have and how do you want to use them, and they'll wait another week with him. The Raiders should,
and that's a prime thing. You got to remember, you've got to have to have the hats that go around that's going to contribute on special teams too. So if Mendenhall's up, then who's going to be down? Baron Batch is a special teams player. You're not going to put him down. It would either have to be Dwyer or Redmond that you would put down, which, you know, it'll be a good problem to have in a couple of weeks, I think. But that's another good reason, because you have to look at your seven-man inactive list in this thing heading into this game. And that's just one more reason why I think they'll let Mendenhall sit just one more week.
So we'll see what happens with that. Of course, we'll have Friday's injury report. Hopefully, I'll have that by the end of my show today at 4 o'clock. In fact, I should have it maybe by the beginning of the show, because they practice a little earlier on Fridays, and we'll keep you up to date. Dave, let's go into some of the personnel groupings. We talked a little bit about it on Twitter this morning. First, let's start with participation. I think the thing that stuck out to me in the participation on the defensive side of the ball was the breakdown of snaps between Casey Hampton and Steve McClendon, with Steve McClendon only getting 8 snaps. That and because of the fact, we'll get into the point that the Steelers played this big nickel with a different personnel grouping and a different setup than they've used in the past. They played a 4-2-5, which in all my time of watching Dick LeBeau coach this defense, I don't think I've ever seen that defense. Mike Tomlin talked about it as something that, in his press conference, something that we rely on, as if they had done it before, but I don't think I've ever seen it. You wrote a great post with Stills talking about it, talking about the personnel that you thought, your questioning of the personnel on the field. So let's talk about that, Woodley and McClendon in that personnel grouping.
Well, you know, McClendon, I was surprised he got so few snaps, and I think that's going to change this week against the Raiders, because the Raiders run that zone blocking scheme that they like to get on the move with. So I think McClendon's a lot more mobile than Casey is, but I was surprised that Casey had, you know, what, 3 times the amount of snaps.
I think it was a 29-8 maybe, or 27-8. So, yeah, maybe more than 3 times.
Yeah, let me look at the numbers here. 27-9 is what we got tabulated here for in favor of Casey here. So, now, they were 5 of those snaps. I think Casey was on the field for the big nickel type situation there. The only other thing that really jumps out is in participation numbers on the defensive side of the ball, was, as you said, Lamar Woodley was off the field for 5 snaps there when they were in that big nickel there. But, yeah, Casey, you know, like I said, heading into this game, I was surprised. You know, as much as John Mitchell talked about Steve McClendon, you know, after the draft and heading into the season and all like that, you know, I respect Casey Hampton, but I think you've got to limit his snaps better. Especially if you don't feel there's a drop off, you know, going to McClendon here. And here's one thing to think about. Somebody brought this up on the radio. Maybe on some of these personnel switches, it's better to leave Casey on the field instead of having him running back and forth, you know, and tiring him out to the sideline there. But, you know, and Casey only normally plays in base situations as well, too, which the Steelers use quite a bit. In the game against the Jets here, that has a lot to play with it too, because Casey's not going to be on the field in nickel situations right now, as long, you know, assuming they can get him off. So those are a few things that stuck out participation wise. The big nickel thing, you know, Dick LeBeau talks to the media every Thursday, and I was hoping we would get more out of that when they were asking him about the big nickel. Mark Cabali, I think, was the one that brought up the question to him, and Dick LeBeau kind of just wrote it off as, look, it's just things that we need to work on because of injuries, basically. We just need different packages for different bodies at some point during the season. That's the most vague I've seen Dick LeBeau be in a while. I mean, he almost made it sound like, well, we ran the big nickel 5 times with that grouping as practice, you know, which we all know. You've got a purpose for putting in a defensive grouping. Now, in a blowout, that's one thing, but that game was anything but a blowout, really, when you look at it against the Jets. Now, I like Mike Tomlin's response he gave Tuesday better in regard to the big nickel, and this was sort of what I was hoping Dick LeBeau was going to give us on this, was this is a alternative for teams that like to use maybe 3 or more wide receivers, but yet still stay committed to the run, to run against the Steelers' regular nickel, which is 2 up front linemen And then, of course, your extra defensive back. But I like that response better than the one Dick LeBeau gave. And I still kind of question why you would take Lamar Woodley off the field for that. But, you know, you would basically be kicking Ziggy Hood out of that in that case there. So I can understand both sides of it. But one other thing before we get...
What's your argument for taking Woodley off the field?
My only argument is it would mean Ziggy Hood comes off, you know, and if it's a run defense primarily.
Well, yeah, or you could kick Ziggy in and instead of Cam Hayward. I mean,
yeah, you could kick Ziggy in as well, too, and then Casey off, yeah.
Yeah, I'm with you. It doesn't seem to make sense to have Woodley off the field. Just doesn't seem to – you know, look, we haven't seen a lot of Steeler pressure this year. Everybody's talking about how great the defense was last week in the second half, and I'm going to beg to differ a little bit. I think Mark Sanchez was terrible. If he makes some good throws, some different things happen in that game, it's probably a lot closer. So I'm just not buying that the Steelers were as good as people seem to think last week.
Well, here's one thing. I'm doing some research on this, too. You got to remember that they haven't had opposing quarterbacks yet in third and long situations, which allows you to tee off with your outside linebackers on the corner on the quarterback as well, too. So when you're in situations where teams have been willing to run on third down against the Steelers, then you know that keeps you honest from a pass rushing situation. So the defense has got to do a better job of getting themselves into situations where the offense that they're facing is behind the chains, where they can kind of tee off on these quarterbacks. There haven't been a lot of those situations, and when that happens, you're not going to have the pressure, especially, you know, Mark Sanchez gets the ball out. I mean, say what you will about him. He does not hold the ball very long. He got the ball out. Peyton Manning got the ball out pretty quick as well, too. Carson Palmer's going to get the ball out pretty quick. So when you're running into situations like that, it's hard to stack up pressures. It's hard to get turnovers too when a lot of your sack fumbles are caused by your outside linebackers.
Yeah, totally on point there. So, all right, we talked about that. Let's talk about the penny defense that both Tomlin and LeBeau referenced. It's essentially, again, the same type of idea, but taking out an outside linebacker taking out a safety and putting a corner in, right?
Absolutely. Basically, it's your base defense. You take out one safety and put in your nickel corner at that point. So
they could play that as a 4-4. What do they play that then? As a 3-3-5?
It'd probably be a 3-4, a 3-4-5.
3-4, right?
I mean, sure. Three.
That's too many.
Yeah. How would they play that? You have your
foot played it with two up front, but I think they wanted to,
you're not going to cheat your safety down in that situation because you only have one on the field there. So you've got your four defensive backs back. You've got your four linebackers. So you would, in essence, be a 4-4, a 4-3-4.
4-3-4. Okay. All right. Yeah. Right. With the safety in three corners.
Right. Well, and what you're going to do is you're going to have the linebacker down low because and you're going to drop one linebacker into coverage. I mean, basically, I guess if you want to get technical with it, 5-2-4. But normally in that situation, one of your linebackers is going to drop into coverage there. So here's the thing about the penny. Don't get caught up with the lineup. The penny more than anything gives you the ability to match up better personnel on the wide receivers, and it gives you your extra corner, your nickel corners in the game to be able to run more press man type coverage, but yet you maintain your big body presence up front there by staying in your base defense with your three down linemen, and then of course your two outside linebackers, which, like I said, normally one of your outside linebackers, depending on down and distance, is probably going to drop into coverage depending on the personnel that they're facing. So it just helps you match up better from a man coverage standpoint, but yet still defend against the run, as opposed to your regular nickel, which pulls one of your defensive linemen off the field at that time.
Right. And so, Dave, I guess then we go to the offensive side of the ball. One of the things we saw the first week was Kotsure with 14 snaps. Manny Sanders was 60. Anything of note here in offensive participation?
That they didn't use as much 11 personnel, you know, and we, you know, I said that going into last week's game. I thought based on what we saw the first week with all the no huddle and the 11 personnel and moving to the, I kind of figured we would use more 21 or 22 personnel with the two running backs this past week, and that's exactly what they did. Now, when you, I broke down the stats too, coming out of these groupings, the 13 plays that they ran with the three tight ends on the field, all 13 of those were runs. You got to do it better. Now it's still early in the season. You can't say, well, this, you know, it's predictable here, predictable there. But you got to do a better job, at least mixing it up here moving forward. If people are seeing this 13 personnel come onto the field, you're going to have to start passing now out of it.
Yeah, I didn't like the 13 personnel. I don't think it was particularly effective. They ran right behind it the whole time, and a couple times they lost big yardage. They had a couple plays that gained some yards, but I don't think it was an effective grouping.
The one time that they did use the 23 was the rushing touchdown to Isaac Redman there, but even that...
Which
he did by himself, right. Now, that 23 includes the fullback in there instead of the regular 13. At that point, no wide receivers are on the field in the 23, whereas in the 13, you have one on the field. So,
and Dave, did we? Is the offensive participation up on the site yet, or is that up later today?
No, I had the offensive participation up early in the week. You probably just not seen.
And the breakdowns of the receivers?
Hold on a minute. I'll pull that up for you.
I'll pull it up too. Sorry about that.
That's right. It's just not on the front.
I got it right here. So we had
you got most of your receivers in the 40s. You got Mike Wallace had 40, Antonio Brown 41, Sanders 40, Kotchery 10.
It was just a little interesting. We talked about it on Wednesday, that it was really, he being Haley or Tomlin went out there and we saw Kotchery and Sanders start a couple drives in the second half and be out there for a couple plays. So I don't know we talked about it Wednesday. We don't know more, but it'll be interesting to see if it was just a rest thing or what was going on with that. And the rest of it's pretty straightforward. I think, Batch 10 plays, Rainey 9 plays, that's worth noting. Will Johnson 23 plays, that's worth noting as well. And then Dwyer and Redman, that flipped. He said Dwyer was going to get more time this week, and we saw last week, I think it was 42 to 24 or 28. Dwyer had more snaps this week. It was 23 for Dwyer and 25 for Redman. So it's hard to get a sense of just if it's just getting everybody involved because nobody stood out, or I don't know exactly what Todd Haley's philosophy is here, but it's a little. I think there's a little bit to see here in this participation. And then Pope 27 and Paulson 15. And we can talk about the tight end situation, Dave, because this will be the last game without Wes Saunders. He's going to come back, and the Steelers are going to have to make a decision probably on one of those two guys, assuming nobody gets hurt.
Well, when you look at the participation, though, the reason the wide receiver numbers are decreased is because they rotated in basically three and a half receivers. We'll call Jericho Kotchery a half.
Yeah.
In so many 21 personnel groupings there, so which has two wide receivers on the field. So they did a good job of rotating those guys around. If you're a fantasy football fan, you're not going to like what's going to happen throughout the season because you're going to see decreased snaps from these guys going forward. And the way that they're spreading the ball around, it's going to be tough for one of these guys, I think, to get 1,000 yards receiving. But, that's for another podcast. But the other thing that you mentioned with the tight ends, we talked briefly about this the other day, and I might have done a 180 on this in my terms of thinking here. Listen, when Saunders comes back, somebody's got to go. It's got to be a tight end, you would think, because, they're already carrying one less lineman.
And four wide receivers, so.
And four wide receivers, and they do have the extra back, but I don't think any of those guys are going to be released, though. So it's got to be a tight end that's got to go. Here's the thing. Pope's salary is guaranteed, but it's not like we're talking about an astronomical amount of money here. That being said, Paulson still has practice squad eligibility. Paulson has not been, there's not a lot of tape on him through the first two games. He's been a good special teams player, but you have to ask yourself, if you release Paulson, is he going to clear waivers? And I think the answer to that is yes, because if somebody's going to claim
him, absolutely, he clears waivers. Absolutely.
Because if somebody's going to add Paulson off the waiver wire, it's because they need the body probably for a depth tight end position. So you're not just going to claim a special teams player, in my opinion, unless somebody out there sees Paulson as tremendous, tremendous upside as a seventh round pick. If you're going to claim him too, you're probably just not going to throw him on your inactive list either. So I think when it's all said and done, they will release Paulson, let him clear waivers. They will cut Jamie McCoy off the practice squad and sign Paulson to the practice squad to take his place there. And that just is the most logical thing to do. Pope had some nice – had two. I'm on Pope all the time. Trust me, I'm watching him all season long. He did have two nice blocks in that game against the Jets there. And I think Todd Haley just trusts what he can do with him. Right now, moving forward, I think Paulson has good upside, but you know, I think Pope and his experience is going to win out here.
Yeah, I'd rather they didn't, but whatever. The money issue, it's a $450,000 issue that Omar Khan will save if Paulson goes to the practice squad. We can take you through the logistics of that. It's just Paulson goes to the practice squad, cut a practice squad player, you pay Wes Saunders. That's all the same because Saunders and Paulson making generally the same money. If they cut Pope, they obviously his salary is guaranteed. He gets paid, and then you bring Saunders in at his salary. So that's the increase there. So it'll be interesting to see. They get another week to evaluate. They get another week to see if they get out clean. But, Dave, one of the things, if they get out clean out of this game injury-wise, they could go into this Eagles game. And, by the way, I think the Eagles are a good team. They've won two games with 9 turnovers so far. If they get that under control, they could be very dangerous. But they could have a full 53-man roster with virtually everybody healthy, knock on wood.
I think the big question, of course, would be Harrison and Polamalu heading into that game. One quick thing I wanted to wrap up, I wanted to get out there on the tight ends and the personnel groupings, David, when they get Saunders back here. I really, really think you're going to see the 21 personnel grouping start to increase when Saunders comes back because 21 personnel gives you so much I'm sorry, not 21, 12 personnel. One running back, two tight ends. I think you're going to see this increase a little bit because it's such a, especially if Saunders is where we hope he's going to be as far in terms of blocking and his ability, route running, and pass catching. I think that that personnel grouping fits what Todd Haley likes to be as far as being multiple on offense. Let's face it, if you have a good 12 personnel package, let's say, and the Ravens like to use a 22 and a 12. The Patriots love to use the 12 with their two tight ends. It allows you to do so much. You can flex your tight ends out. You can bunch them back in, depending on what you face. If you got a team with their nickel defense on the field, you can bunch it up and run out of it. If you have a team in their base defense, you can kind of spread it out a little bit there. So that's one thing I want everybody to kind of keep in the back of their head when we get Wes Saunders back. Watch the 12 personnel grouping in some of those games moving forward and see if that doesn't start kicking up and see if Saunders doesn't start getting in the neighborhood of, let's say, 18 to 20 snaps a game.
18 to 20 snaps. I think that's right. I mean, we see how many Pope's getting right now, and I got to think that Saunders is going to take away from his one of, you know, he's going to get, yes, I think you're, I, let's just leave it at that. That's dead on.
Well, and the reason Pope's number is going to come down is look at all the 13 this past week that they ran, all the three tight end sets. That's going to
I hope we don't see that.
Right, that's going to decrease. So, you know, it's hard to look at these participation numbers. But you have to look at participation numbers along with the personnel groupings to see why this player got so many more snaps or whatnot. But I firmly think, and I might shoot low, I might have shot low there, probably 25 to 27 based on the number of offensive plays that they run is probably a better number I should be using for Saunders when he returns.
I think that's the number. All right, Dave. So we touched a lot. Thanks to Vic for coming on with us on Wednesday. Hopefully, the audio that he was in the car came out fine. And we touched on all the stuff there. It's an injury thing. They run a West Coast offense. It's all 3-5, 7-step drops. He never Palmer will get the ball out of his hand quickly, as you said. We talked about the backs in the backfield. We hit on all this stuff. Dave, just in terms of general keys to the game, what are you thinking about?
The Raiders love to run. You know, they're running that zone blocking scheme this year. And McFadden, they haven't found the rhythm with it yet. Let's just say it. Everybody remembers the way the Ravens ran it against us last year. The Houston Texans run it absolutely fantastic.
Let's remember, McFadden was leading the league in yards rushing last year, over 600 through six games before he got hurt.
And he is once he learns how to pick his spots, I think, in this scheme, I think he's going to do better. They haven't yet. The Raiders are struggling worse than the Steelers are on running the football. But here's what scares me, and we talked about this with Casey Hampton. Do you really want Casey Hampton shuffling down the line all this game, having the ability to be cut and all like that? And Brett Kiesel's another year older as well, too. I think you want to stay as young as you can up front with these guys. I think you got to do a good job of getting Kiesel and Cameron Hayward rotated into this game here on rundowns. And I think you have to get Steve McClendon in here as well in place of Casey as well, too, because they're going to try to string the defensive front out. They're going to try to make the Steelers linebackers fill these gaps that open up at times in this zone blocking scheme, and they're going to try to gash them at times. And McFadden is a running back that can do this. And this is the biggest thing that scares me the most, even though the Raiders have not run good. It gives them the ability to run sort of a play action and sprint Palmer out the other direction with your line moving one way. You get all that motion moving one way, and you're going to have some backside tight end passes available, or a running back, or a fullback leaking out into the flat as well, too. So even as bad as the Raiders' running game has been so far in two games, this is what scares me the most about them, is their zone blocking scheme versus the age that the Steelers have on the defensive line.
Yeah, I have to tell you, and I just look at the roster, I look at the personnel, it's an NFL team, fine. They're really banged up in the secondary. I'll be interested to watch and see how they use safety Michael Huff, if they move him into the nickel, if they move him in the slot, which they've done in the past, or if they actually think about running him at corner. I'd be surprised if they did that. The front four, if the Steelers, the Steelers can dominate this game if their offensive line plays well against this defensive front. It's a decent defensive front. Offensively, the Raiders, their line, they're going to be missing the right tackle. The receivers don't scare me. The Darren McFadden scares the hell out of me. And so, those are the two things. I think controlling their D-line and, keying on McFadden, and the Steelers should be able to take care of business.
I wonder how much of that big nickel maybe we'll see against, against their zone blocking. And do you want two less linebackers, though, on the field, especially if they try to it depends on the personnel the Raiders use. I would think it would be better to have the four big bodies maybe up front, have your two inside linebackers kind of floating along with the flow, to kind of combat that. But, McFadden does scare me in this situation. Let's face it, too. McFadden is their has the most targets, pass targets so far this year for them, most receptions, too. The big thing, and this is keeping behind the chains, Palmer's not a West Coast quarterback, but he is adapted to the West Coast system. I mean, he's a smart kid, let's face it. He can adapt to anything. He does get the ball out quick, not as quick as, say, Mark Sanchez does, but he does get it out quicker than most. They're not going to what are they allowed? One or two sacks, I think, through two games, which is not bad. Now, they're going to be without Khalif Barnes, their right tackle, in this game. The thing is you want to jump on the Raiders early in this game if you can.
Absolutely, boy,
if you put 10 to 14 points right up on the board on them real quick, that's going to be huge, because that forces them to pass more. Although Palmer is not afraid, what I saw early in the last two games is he's not afraid to still throw it vertically down the field, outside the numbers as well, too. So, you know, getting them out of their run game early by jumping on them is going to be huge in this game when you look at the Raiders from an offensive perspective. Now, if the Steelers keep this game close and their offense does not score, it's going to keep the Raiders around for a long, long time. We all know what happens in the NFL when you let teams kind of hang around in the fourth quarter. Anything can happen at that point. So jumping on them quickly is a huge factor in this game, and shutting down their run early and making Palmer beat you with his arm is what you want to try to happen in this game.
Yep. Okay, Dave. Are you ready to get to our picks for the week?
Yeah. Real quick, when you flip over to the other side of the ball, I just want to get this point out here. They are banged up, the Raiders in the secondary, without their two starting corners. We already know that. Rolando McClain, watch his status closely here. I think you're going to see a lot of 11 personnel back in this game, David, because I think you kind of stretch them out. And even though you want to try to run and establish your run game, I think you want the ball in Ben Roethlisberger's hands in this game. Because I think that the Raiders' front seven is going to do a good job against the run in this game. Breaking down the way the Steelers' offensive line played the first two games, I think you want the ball in Roethlisberger's hand. Look for a lot of 11 personnel in this game, and look, when they do have the two running backs in there, trying to get Chris Rainey involved a little bit more once again in this game out of the backfield. So, that's our focus on both sides of the ball for the Steelers versus the Raiders. And we'll get into this week's picks where.
Let me just ask you one other thing, because this is a non-story that's being made a story now. The fact that the Steelers didn't use a no huddle and Ben wants more no huddle and stuff like that. Okay, let's just get it out there so we can get it out there and address it. How much no huddle do you expect to see this week against the Raiders?
I expect, let's say, 15 to 20 plays. I think you will see it. Depending on if they can catch them in a base situation with those two corners of theirs on the field, if you can catch them weak in the secondary there, catch them in their base, I would go after him. I would attack.
All right, good stuff. To the picks, and you gave me a thumping in week one. I think you beat me by four, and I came back with a week of 7-8-1 this week. You went 6-9-1, so you're three up on me, and we both goose-egged it last night with Carolina, who got stomped by the Giants.
I didn't see that game going. You know, I wasn't on, when Cam Newton was drafted, I didn't give him a lot of credit, David. Since then, I've been kind of monitoring his week-to-week stuff because, boy, the Panthers are good at getting explosive plays, man. The kid just, he's an exciting kid to watch. Boy, they laid an egg last night, and their defense especially, too bad Cam Newton can't play defense for them. But what a ugly game. And just, I think you said at the top of the show, just when you think you've got Tom Coughlin behind the eight ball due to the injuries that they had, they didn't have Akeem Nicks, they were out without Ahmad Bradshaw, boy, they put up a solid performance. So I have no excuses for my picks last week there. The man got me pretty good as well. I'm sure the man got you pretty well. So one
he
more.
He cut me up, man. He cut me up.
One more week like that, we're going to have to get back on this begging for donations.
Yeah, we're going to be. I don't want people to think that's what we're using our good hard cash for. We're using it to upgrade the site and our equipment and all that stuff. But, yeah. Yeah, I might have to spend my Friday nights at home. Let's just put it that way.
Well, I do that.
so Dave,
what's wrong with spending your Friday nights at home?
Because I'm alone, baby. I'm alone.
All right.
You got 20,000 followers. I'm out here in the wilderness with 2,600 followers. Where are all these people?
Follow David M. Todd on Twitter. Hey, and be listening, Dave. You're doing a great job on your show too. So guests today too.
People listen to this early. Yeah, we got great guests today. I got my man Dr. Bob the Handicapper, but I got Kerry Byrne from Cold Hard Football Facts. It's the first time I've had him on. He's a good dude. He's got a heavy Boston accent, so you got to fight through that a little bit, like we had to fight through Vic's accent a little bit on Wednesday. But it should be good stuff. I'm looking forward to it. They got tons and tons of data. So if you, it should be at, I think maybe at 2:20 today, if we get this up and you hear it early. Otherwise, you can obviously listen to the podcast on 970 ESPN. All right. So Dave, the other thing about that game last night, Andre Brown and Ramses Barden, oh my God. I mean, it is the thing about the NFL. We talk about paying Mike Wallace or doing the great things. And just two things last night. Andre Brown cut five times, cut by both the Giants and Carolina, and he's had two really good weeks here in the NFL. And that's the whole argument against drafting running backs high, is you can find guys who can run hard for a period of time. He was a fourth-round pick out of NC State. Ramses Barden is the argument for a big receiver. If you can run, and, you know, I just all of a sudden Ramses Barden looked like a Hall of Famer to me last night. He's running these inside cuts, and he kept running the same play, just the square in, and 15 yards, and he's 6'6", and Eli wasn't hitting him in the numbers. He was hitting him up high, and this kid went up and got some balls. I was really impressed, and this shows you how important depth is in the National Football League.
Absolutely. When you throw in what they were able to do offensively, being able to run the football well, that opens up a lot of that because it gets you the extra safety or whatnot, extra run help down in the box, and then it leaves your receivers out there on an island, and then you have a situation where you have the tight end Bennett that's able to exploit the middle of the seam with a linebacker tailing them. So running the football on early downs or gaining yardage, period, on first down in the NFL is so understated. You know, if you can get 4 or 5 yards a clip on first down, it really, really, really loosens up a defense, and it makes some receivers on the depth chart the ability to make some plays, and that's what Barden did. Strong hands last night, very strong hands from the kid.
Yeah, really good game. All right, well, let's get to this week's picks without further ado. I'm not going to say we're due, but hopefully we're going to do better. As I pull up my frozen board here. So this week's picks, the 1 o'clock games, the first game on the board, Dave, St. Louis, who, did me a solid last week with Sam Bradford, in the most entertaining game of the week by far. They beat the Skins. So Sam Bradford takes the boys on the road to Chicago, who had their troubles with Green Bay, and they've had a long time to think about it. That line's 7.5 in Chicago.
Jay Cutler's going to bounce back. I mean, I'm not a huge Jay Cutler fan, but I think they'll get some things straightened out this week against the Rams at home. So give me Chicago lay the 7.5 at home.
I'm going to take St. Louis. I just think St. Louis might be a lot better than people think this year. I like Jeff Fisher. I don't feel great about this game, and I'll probably take a skip. But mark me down for Allen. Mark me down for St. Louis. Dallas and San Francisco. Now, this is a great 1 o'clock game. Excuse me. I'm sorry. I read the schedule on. Of course, that would be a great 1 o'clock game because neither are on the East Coast, so it would be really early. But if we have Tampa at Dallas and Tampa coming off a really good win in their first week, a tough loss because they played well against the Giants until the fourth quarter when Eli carved them up. They go to Dallas. Dallas lands 7.5. I'm going to take the Cowboys with a big offensive showing here, and I'll lay the 7.5.
I like what's going on over there in Tampa. I think they're slowly starting to figure some things out there. I don't know, Dallas, you would think they would have really rolled big last week, and that scares me. Give me Tampa Bay plus the, what is it, 7? 7.5?
It's 7.5.
Give me the 7.5.
All right, we're different on the first two. There we go. San Francisco goes to Minnesota. Everybody's got San Francisco on top of their power rankings, which are relatively worthless now, but they've been great. Christian Ponder's been better than I thought, and Adrian Peterson's back, but 6.5 is a lot for a home dog but Minnesota's not that good. I'll lay the 6.5.
Daggum. You know what? Give me Minnesota. I've got a feeling about this game. I can't tell you why, but give me Minnesota plus the, what'd you say? 7.5, 6.5.
6.5, yep.
I think it's going to move to 7, and if so, I'm definitely going to be on this game. But give me Minnesota plus the 6.5.
All right, we got 3. We're all different with no conviction. The next game.
Hey, how can we convict?
the next game is Detroit at Tennessee. Detroit on the road, a 3.5-point favorite. Tennessee 0-2 to start the season. They lose at home to New England. They go to San Diego and get smoked. You ready to take Matt Stafford laying 3.5 on the road?
No, I'm not. give me Tennessee in this game.
I'll take Detroit. So we're different on all four. Cincinnati goes to Washington. This to me, I think this line's. I think, well, whatever. Washington's given 3 at home to Cincinnati. Who you got?
I want Cincinnati. They're to me, I like what RG3's doing. Cincinnati's have some issues on defense, but offensively, I think they're going to get some things worked out this week. So give me Cincinnati and Washington's favorite in this game, right?
Yeah, you're getting three.
Yeah, yeah. Give me the points on this.
Yeah, I'll take the points too.
I think Cincinnati wins this outright.
Yeah, I do too, but I don't think Cincinnati's that good. But I do think they win this game because I don't think. Obviously, by the way, here's a good stat for you. This is Mike Shanahan's third year as coach of the Skins. It's the third time he's been favored at home. It tells you something about the teams he's had. Miami is hosting the Jets. The Jets are laying 2.5. I will take the Jets. I think we'll see more Tebow this game. I think it'll create all sorts of chaos in New York after they win this game by 14 points and Tebow plays well, and I'm all for.
Reggie Bush looked great in that game against the Raiders. A lot of the, and this is one thing we didn't talk about as far as why the Raiders gave up so many rushing yards last week. A lot of that had to do with Reggie Bush. This guy's running like a man possessed. I think this is going to be a low scoring game. I think the Jets win this game, but I think they win it on a late field goal. And so thus being said, I think Miami plus the points here.
Plus 2.5.
Oh, man, I'm showing three. Give me plus 2.5.
All right. Kansas
City. No sense this week, but I got some.
We've agreed on two. Kansas City going to New Orleans. New Orleans laying 9. Well, we know they don't have trouble scoring points, and they're not going to have trouble scoring points this week. They're going to score 40 points. So I think 9's okay, but this is the perfect tease it down game because they start 0-3. They're dead.
Kansas City plus 9 for me.
Wow. All right. We got a lot different here. Cleveland's hosting Buffalo, laying 3. This is an interesting game. Brandon Weeden played great. Buffalo is laying the 3 here. Cleveland, I'm going to take Brandon Weeden at home and Trent Richardson, who was really good last week as well. I'd probably take a pass on it, but I'll take Cleveland plus 3.
I'm with you on this one. I think they're going to try to run the ball and play time of possession in this game. I think it's going to be a low-scoring game. Give me Cleveland plus the 3.
Andrew Luck got his first win last week as Indy got a late one over Minnesota. They're hosting Jacksonville. They're laying 3. I just think Jacksonville's the worst team in the game. I'm gonna take Andrew Luck again that they win this game laying 3.
I'm gonna take Jacksonville and they're gonna rely heavily on Maurice Jones-Drew in this game. So give me the points in this one. And in fact, I think Jacksonville can win this game outright.
We haven't seen the Steelers play early yet, and again they're late tonight, but they are late on Sunday afternoon. The first game on the card is now an interesting game is Philadelphia at Arizona, and Philadelphia is laying 3.5. I think the Eagles are really good. I do. I think they're maybe the best team in the NFC if Mike Vick plays reasonably well. Now that's a reasonably big assumption, but they're laying 3.5, and I'm all over them.
I like what Arizona's doing on defense. I don't like all the turnovers. The Eagles have they seem out of sync offensively. It seems to be too much reliant on Vic kind of making big plays running sometimes. But I just don't trust Vic in this game for some reason. I like what Arizona's doing defensively right now. So give me the 4.
Okay.
What'd you say? The line?
The 3.5, but I'll give it to you.
Okay. Give me the 3.5.
Another fun game at 4:05. Atlanta at San Diego. San Diego laying 3. Maybe you got me convinced that Atlanta's not so bad and Matt Ryan's not so bad. I'm going to take the points.
I want Atlanta in the points too.
Houston at Denver. Houston laying 1.5. They're the team who's on top of most people's AFC power rankings now. Peyton didn't look so great last week. He looked like maybe some arm strength issues. Who you got?
Boy, Houston's a machine right now, man. You take Foster off, you put Tate in there, you don't lose anything. What they're doing, Owen Daniels at tight end, J.J. Watt. It's hard to go against Houston. So give me Houston a later points.
I'm with you on Houston. New England, Baltimore, great late game. We got this a fun weekend. Not that they're all fun, but New England at Baltimore. Baltimore land 3 at home, 8:25, the Sunday night game. I'm gonna take the Ravens.
When's the last time Belichick lost back-to-back games? Jeez.
That's a great question.
That reason alone, I don't think Baltimore's defense has been is where it needs to be by any stretch of the imagination. I think Brady throws for 300-something yards in this game. So give me New England plus the points.
Seattle is a tough home team. With that 12th man, they play Monday night. They host Green Bay. Green Bay looked great at home defensively. They didn't actually look as great offensively against that Chicago pressure. Seattle's got a really good D. Everything in me wants to take Seattle, but I can't do it. I'm going to take Green Bay and lay the 3.5.
I'm with you. I'm going to lay the 3.5 as well, too. But I think this game is going to be really, really close. I think the young quarterback, Russell Wilson, at the end of this game, makes some kind of mistake that a pick six or something like that. But Seattle does have a great secondary, and that's what's going to keep them in this game. But like I said, I think a mistake towards the end of this thing will end up helping Green Bay cover.
All right, Steelers, Raiders. 4:25 kickoff at the Oakland Alameda County Coliseum. We'll have the Oakland Alameda. Do you think Alameda Ta'amu, the practice squad guys, they don't travel, right? Not the practice squad guys. The 53 travel, right? The practice squad guys don't?
Generally the practice squad guys don't travel.
Yeah, and so the 53 guys all obviously go. You never know what's going to happen in the 24 hours leading up to the game. So the Alameda Ta'amu will be in the Alameda County Coliseum. But, again, we don't expect him to get a hat. But I think the Steelers put it on him here. I think you hit it right on. Put this game in Ben's hands. Make it happen. Sebo's got a huge leg. I hope it doesn't come down to special teams because it is the one area where the Raiders are as good as anybody in the league. But I'm gonna give it to the Steelers 31-13 in a not close one.
And what line are you showing here?
I'm showing 4.
Something's
down from 6.
Yeah, something's not smelling right here. Steelers win this game. They should blow them out, in my opinion. But they have problems blowing out teams that they should blow out sometimes. When it's all said and done, Roethlisberger is going to have to win this game for them late. And I have the Steelers 23-20 is the final. So give me the Raiders plus the 4.
Oh, okay. All right, Dave. Well, a good solid 50-some minutes here. Let's wrap things up. We'll have you. I'll be on today, 2-4, Saturday. I will be at the Rivers Casino. The Wheelhouse Bar and Grill from 6 to 8 for College Football Hotline. And then, of course, I'll be on Sunday this week. It'll be 12 to 2 from Canes and Dormont, and you'll be joining me around 12:30 as you do every Sunday on Tailgate Talk.
Absolutely. I always look forward to that as well, too. Both appearances with you. You do a great job. I like being on before pregame as well, too. And listen, everybody, we appreciate all the donations. I think David sent out some more emails yesterday to some people there. This is pocket money for David. Gives him some some beer money, so to speak, some cocktail money. It helps me, just helps keep my server costs down on Steelers Depot as well, too. So, as always, follow me on Twitter at Steelers Depot. Follow David at David M. Todd. Follow the show at Terrible Podcast. Let's see what else we got. Email the show, theterriblepodcast@gmail.com. And take us home, David.
As always, thanks for listening to the Terrible Podcast with Dave and Dave.